Welcome to Inside the Castle. I'm your host, Reagan Lauritsen.
And I'm your co-host, Amy Snively. Today, we are looking at the big picture of how the Corps is modernizing to deliver our massive national missions faster and more effectively.
To help us explore that, we are incredibly honored to be joined by Mr. Ryan Fisher. Mr. Fisher assumed the duties of the Executive Deputy for Civil and Emergency Operations at the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers headquarters on July 7, 2025. Sir, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today.
Thanks, Reagan and Amy, both of you. You're both valued colleagues. It's nice to talk to you on a podcast instead of a staff meeting like we normally do.
Before we get into the heavy topics like infrastructure and policy, we always like to ask our guests how we're doing. We do normally do this in staff meetings, but sir, we'd like to talk about it today because you have been in this executive deputy role since early July of last year. How has that transition been for you over the last year and over the last few months with any changes?
Amy, it's been great. I was acting in this role for nearly a year and was recently selected actually permanently for this job and for the senior executive service. And, you know, it's customary like any job, you're going to make mistakes when you take it. And I've certainly made some over this first year that I was acting in the role. So now I need to hunker down and focus on not making those same mistakes in year two. So I've learned some things. I think if you boil down the transition to an SES role, which I think is the same for every SES at any federal agency, it's really about taking the policies proposed and adopted by a presidential administration and operationalizing those for execution. It's the same thing you hear out of General Kelly, right? He talks about the role of headquarters. It is our responsibility to serve as a bridge between the policy initiatives of the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Civil Works and the folks who are executing our missions at the district level.
Thank you, Mr. Fisher. I do know that, you know, with leadership, they say that empathy is a key component. I find it impressive that you started off by just admitting that you have flaws and you have errors and you move forward too. And I think that's a great example for our listeners. The worst leaders I've ever worked for in my career were the ones that couldn't make a decision at all. So we appreciate you. And congrats on the huge milestone with being confirmed as a senior executive service member.
Yeah, it's truly an honor.
Huge congratulations to you, sir. I'm going to have to figure out how to add some digital confetti in post-production for that. What an exciting time for you to be leading this team. I'm so happy to be part of it. Stepping into the SES tier is a perfect segue into your background because you've worked on Corps issues for almost your entire career. You started on the legislative side, joined the Corps as an outreach coordinator for the Pittsburgh District, and eventually served as the Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Army for Civil Works. How has seeing the agency from the district level all the way up to the administration shaped your perspective?
Yeah, Amy. So I was working at the Indiana State Senate out of college when Mike Pence ran for Congress in 2000. I did not know him, but we're both from Columbus, Indiana. So I thought, hey, if he can't hire a hometown kid, who can he hire? So I ended up being his driver on that campaign in 2000. I was just shuttling him around East Central Indiana in a Chevy Malibu for all of his various campaign appearances. He ultimately won that election. And then I was fortunate enough to serve on his legislative staff here in D.C. for the first three terms in Congress. And that job involves a lot of bill research, a lot of bill drafting, taking a lot of constituent meetings, a little bit of speech writing. It really exposes you to a wide range of policy ideas and is very helpful towards really any career you might embark on. More importantly, that job really paid off because it's where I met my wife. She worked at the office next door. And that's how I started my career then in Pittsburgh. My wife's from Pittsburgh. That's her hometown. So when we started a family, we moved there. And I started as the outreach coordinator there in the Pittsburgh district. And I was fortunate to engage with state and local and municipal officials that touched all parts of what the Corps of Engineers does. So that's a job, that outreach coordinator position is a job that exposes you to all facets of the Corps of Engineers. It's a good orientation. And then, as you said, I served as the Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Army for Civil Works, which is an appointed administration position that allowed me to see the Corps of Engineers from the perspective of an executive branch leader responsible for policy and oversight of a federal agency. So I think, Amy, I think it's a well-rounded background. I know the Corps from the inside and out, really, from a congressional perspective, from an administration perspective, from an internal district and headquarters perspective, and hopefully it means I understand the stakeholder perspective as I've interacted with our non-federal sponsors and stakeholders and users at every level.
Having lived in D.C. and driven in that area, I now have a newfound respect for you. So impressive. I think we all have stories from navigating random traffic circles in that city. So it's truly fascinating that you did it at the level in which you did. Now, as the Executive Deputy for Civil and Emergency Operations, your role is massive. For our listeners who might not know the day-to-day scope of your position, you are essentially responsible for the development, defense, and execution of the Corps Civil Works program across the entire U.S. and its territories.
That's right. And that covers all national accounts from investigations and construction to operations and maintenance and the Mississippi River and tributaries. Plus, you oversee all the business lines, navigation, flood risk management, ecosystem restoration, hydropower, recreation, regulatory, and emergency response.
Exactly. It means working closely with senior administration officials, congressional leaders, and local project partners, all while providing leadership and national staff oversight for the Civil Works Directorate. Looking at that enormous portfolio and the challenges facing the nation today, what excites you most about the direction the Corps is going?
So, Reagan, I think the common thread between all Corps employees is that we're excited about public service. We are all helping to position the Corps to meet the nation's evolving water resource challenges while staying true to our primary mission of delivering engineering solutions that serve the public. All of us, we all know the demands on our infrastructure are growing more complex, from increased flooding risks to aging water resource infrastructure to supporting economic growth, supporting environmental stewardship, supporting national security. I think meeting all of those demands is what excites all of us. In particular, I'm energized by the collaborative nature of this role. I think success depends on building strong partnerships across the administration, across Congress, state and local governments, tribal nations, industry, all the communities that we serve. The Corps has a long history of bringing people together to solve these difficult problems. And I believe that collaboration is the way to keep doing it. We will be even more important in the years ahead if we continue to collaborate. I'm probably most excited, though, about leading this workforce, right? The Civil Works team is made up of dedicated professionals with deep technical expertise. It's probably not something I should advertise, but you're talking to the least educated employee of the Corps of Engineers. I have a Bachelor of Arts in Political Science. Good news is that the rest of the workforce does not. They all have master's advanced degrees in engineering, in economics, environmental science, all kinds of disciplines out there that we have experts in. So I'm excited by the prospect of hopefully creating an environment where those experts have the support and the resources and the clear direction they need to succeed. Looking ahead, I see a lot of opportunity to continue modernizing how we deliver projects, how we embrace innovation and new technologies, how we strengthen resilience, ensure our investments are providing lasting benefits for communities across the country. It's an exciting time, right? It's an exciting time to be an employee of the Corps of Engineers, and I'm honored by the opportunity to help lead this organization whose work has such a direct and lasting impact on the American people.
You're right, sir. It is an exciting time. And with that exciting time, it ties perfectly into a major cultural shift happening right now, the Building Infrastructure, Not Paperwork Initiative, or BINP. We've heard leadership talk about this as more than just a slogan. From your vantage point, overseeing civil and emergency operations, what does BINP mean in practice?
So I think at the very simple level, it means good government. It's about the processes that we have put in place serving the mission instead of becoming the mission, right? There are certainly responsibilities that we have to meet, right? Legal responsibilities, fiscal responsibilities, environmental responsibilities, building infrastructure, not paperwork, is asking us to meet those responsibilities, but do it in a streamlined and transparent way by eliminating steps in our processes that might be unnecessary and by leveraging the technology out there that maybe we haven't leveraged in the past. From the perspective of civil works and emergency operations, that means delivering projects that strengthen our infrastructure while also being ready to respond quickly to natural disasters. During emergencies, you know, speed certainly matters, but accountability and stewardship of public resources certainly matter just as much. Building infrastructure, not paperwork, is about finding smarter ways to accomplish all of that, really. And I think ultimately, Amy, like you said, it's a culture shift, right? It encourages us to focus our time and talent on solutions, focus on building resilient communities, supporting our partners rather than creating the administrative burden you sometimes see come out of a federal agency. So when we remove friction from our processes, I think we can deliver infrastructure more efficiently, we can respond more effectively, and we can certainly provide greater value to the American people.
Mr. Fisher, in previous discussions about this initiative, a recurring theme has been trust and empowerment. And for trust, we want the American taxpayers to trust in us to deliver our mission. And empowerment, we really want our team members to feel empowered to deliver our program. And while Amy and I work directly with you and can speak to the trust we have in you and how you empower us every day, how do we ensure that our project managers, our planners, our engineers, that they feel truly empowered to make decisions at their level?
So that's a good question, Reagan. I appreciate the trust we have together, certainly. I think at the end of the day, I think trust and empowerment probably begin with clarity. I think our workforce needs to understand the mission. They need to understand the authorities they've been given. And they certainly need to understand the outcomes we're trying to achieve. And when all of that is clear, I think leaders in this organization should have every confidence in the world that our project managers and our planners and engineers and delivery teams are going to make timely decisions and do that at the lowest appropriate level. I think Mr. Tell has articulated his initiatives very well. So if the enterprise is still seeking clarity on those, then I still have work to do. We talked about being the bridge, headquarters being the bridge between the secretary's office and the field execution. We as the headquarters need to provide the right tools, the right training, and the right information so people can exercise sound judgment to make those decisions. We hire talented people, right? We hire talented professionals because of their expertise. And our role at headquarters is to remove any unnecessary barriers, provide guidance when it's needed, and create an environment where thoughtful, well-informed decisions are encouraged throughout the enterprise. At the same time, you know, empowerment doesn't mean we're going to operate without accountability. It's quite the opposite of that. It means establishing clear expectations, maintaining open communication, and learning from both our successes and our setbacks. When people know they are trusted, I think they know they are supported by their leadership. When they know they are accountable for results, they're going to be more innovative. They're going to be more responsive. They're going to be better able to deliver for the communities that we all serve. I think, Reagan, probably ultimately trust is built through kind of consistency, right? Consistent leadership. When our project leaders demonstrate confidence in their teams and reinforce that confidence with support and recognition. And we're creating a culture where people are willing to take ownership, where they're willing to solve problems, and they're willing to keep the mission moving forward.
Moving forward is hard, and change is hard, especially in an organization as large and as historic as ours. When you are looking at the different business lines, how do you encourage teams to just embrace those innovative tools and methods instead of doing things the way we've always done it?
Change is hard, no doubt. Amy, you're absolutely right about that. You're talking to a guy who has owned his favorite albums on cassette tape. I've owned them on compact disc. I've owned them as MP3s. And now I have subscription to streaming services, right? And I hated changing every single time. I hated that change. It was hard. But sound quality has certainly improved with each of those changes. So it's all definitely worth it. And I've been thinking about this. I've been thinking about change in respect to America 250, right? We just celebrated the nation's birthday. I was 1 year old for America 200, right? The bicentennial. And if you were a Corps district commander in 1976 during the bicentennial, you were heavy into the science and heavy into the engineering decisions, right? You were making decisions about levee alignment. You were determining what type of concrete to build a dam with. You really didn't have to think for 1 second about partners because, frankly, we didn't have them back then. It was just Congress giving the Corps money and the Corps building it. You were down and in to your district, as the chief of engineers would say. Fast forward 50 years later, if you're a district commander in 2026 for America 250, we're still asking that you be down and in. That is still a thing, right? You absolutely have to be down and in, but it's kind of become more art than science. You have to establish and respect partners and stakeholders per the requirements of WERDA 1986, and you have to leverage the alternative delivery authorities that we have to deliver a project as efficiently as possible. You also have to leverage social media, right, to inform and dialogue with the public. I think about all the changes in the past 50 years. We had, you know, heck, 1976 bicentennial, NEPA and the Clean Water Act, they were just babies. They were Generation X like me, born in the 70s. And I think what I'm trying to say with that is that we've had 50 years of new laws, 50 years of some new added missions to adjust to, and the next 50 years are going to be no different, right? If you spend a career with the Corps of Engineers, you're going to have to change and adapt. I think of an example from my own career early on. This might be a case in a lot of Corps districts. you're partnering, you're looking for the cost shares of some of our projects, you have to come up with innovative ways to do that. We had a project in Pittsburgh that we needed to come up with a non-federal cost share on, and we did it in an untraditional way. We approached a foundation there in Pittsburgh, charitable foundation, who agreed to grant money, not to us, but to our non-federal partner, the University of Pittsburgh. And the University of Pittsburgh was able to use that grant as a way to fund their planning assistance to states study. So you have to think of other ways to get things done. That's a good lesson to learn in the Corps. Amy, you asked about innovative tools. On that front, I'd hope we'd all be excited about the innovative tools, right? I just said earlier how I'm Generation X. If you're my age, your first exposure to artificial intelligence was R2-D2, right? Then you fast forward 4 or 5 decades, and you later realize that AI is now a real-world thing because your kids are coming home from school and they're using it to do their homework, which, let's be honest, it's 100% what I would have done if it existed in the 90s. I have a Cliff Notes archive to prove that. But my point is pretty simple. It's just embrace the new tools, right? Embrace them to make yourself more efficient, whether it be using prompts to draft an email or pulling from databases to develop alternatives for a coastal storm study. You just want to educate yourself on what's available from the Department of War and, frankly, the broader private sector, and you'll be more efficient at whatever your role is in the organization. And, you know, if leadership is paying attention, you'll be recognized for it.
Thank you for all that advice. I love the concept of it almost becoming standard to just continue to think outside of the lines and think outside of the box and pursue new endeavors. So as we kind of think about our listeners and what they need to grasp from this dialogue, what is your advice to a new Corps employee who is trying to navigate the complexities of our processes while staying focused on the ultimate goal of project delivery?
So, Reagan, I think probably one of the most important lessons I've learned is that our processes, right, the Corps processes exist to improve project outcomes. It's not the other way around. The point is not to become for the processes to become the outcomes themselves. So as you navigate the Corps framework as a new employee, take the time to understand how our different documents connect and support one another, but always keep the end goal in mind, which is delivering quality projects that provide value to our stakeholders and the public. And certainly, please do not hesitate to ask questions and learn from colleagues who have experience across different business lines. The Corps is undoubtedly a complex organization, and no one is expected to know everything on your first day as an employee, but building relationships across the disciplines will help you understand not only what the processes require, but, you know, why they matter. And then at the same time, and this is probably key, right? At the same time, avoid getting so focused on perfecting the documents that you lose sight of project delivery. That's what Mr. Tell is trying to tell us, right? We're not building paperwork, we're building infrastructure. So focus on project delivery, not the documentation itself. And I think good planning should enable informed decisions, right? It should reduce risk and keep projects moving forward. If you, as a new employee, when you understand the purpose behind each requirement, it's going to become much easier for you to prioritize your efforts and make sound decisions. Lastly, I guess I'd say to remember that flexibility and continuous learning are essential to all of this. Policies, guidance, priorities, all of these things evolve, right? But the mission remains the same. We're delivering engineering solutions that serve the nation. If you stay focused on that mission while maintaining a collaborative, solutions-oriented mindset, you're going to be well-positioned for success in the Corps of Engineers.
Great advice. When it comes to building infrastructure, not paperwork, I was just curious, are there any actionable wins that we can see this early on after the rollout of the initiative?
Certainly there are, Reagan. I think we're leaning into alternative delivery methods, which are going to help us deliver projects more efficiently and quicker. I think the biggest, though, is probably in our planning realm, right? We've adopted rapid planning, and we like to use acronyms in the Army. RAPID stands for risk-informed, aligned, proportional, iterative, and decisive. And I think we're now narrowing in on the main increments of a project, getting those to a 35% design maturity so that we can avoid cost overruns in the future, getting that crucial element of a project constructed quicker and then coming in behind it with the other elements of it later on. So I think those are some early big wins for building infrastructure, not paperwork.
Thank you for that, sir. As we wrap up, what's the biggest takeaway you want our listeners to remember about the future of the USAC Civil Works and Emergency Operations Programs? We've covered a lot of ground today, but just one last.
Yeah, so Amy, thanks for that. I think that We talked a little bit there about America 250. The Corps of Engineers has been around since the birth of the nation, all 250 years of it. And I think our future isn't about changing who we've been or who we are. It's going to be about continuing to evolve, about how we deliver the mission. So if we stay collaborative, if we stay adaptable, if we remain focused on the mission, remain focused on execution, the Corps of Engineers will continue to make a lasting difference for the nation.
Well, Mr. Fisher, this has been a fantastic conversation. Thank you for sharing your insights. And once again, a huge congratulations on being confirmed as a senior executive service member.
Thank you, Reagan. Thank you, Amy. It's been a pleasure. I really think we should record all of our staff meetings like this.
Don't hold us to it, sir. Thank you so much for your time today.
Yes, and to our listeners, thank you for joining us on this episode of Inside the Castle. Until next time, keep building strong.